You're listening to Spice Radio 1200 AM's The Morning Buzz, and we are speaking to Margaret Adovgal, Managing Director at Resource Work Society. And this week's topic is housing prices are at an all-time high, and Canadians are paying more than ever for rent and mortgages. So why is the District of Squamish delaying approval for much-needed temporary housing for energy workers? Margaret, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, and Karen, great to be here.
Now, according to recent data by Statistics Canada, Canadians are paying so much to service their debts that our remaining disposable income is practically non-existent. What's going on here?
That's right. Canadian households owe about $1.79 in credit mortgage debt on average for every dollar of disposable income. And these are numbers from our National Statistics Agency from the fourth quarter of last year. They've been tracking this one for many years now. And I saw a breakdown yesterday that actually positions Vancouver as the very worst place for this in Canada, where over the last few years, the share of disposable income has fallen through straight to the bottom. So if someone's servicing their debts, some of that could be consumer debts like credit cards, but a lot of that is mortgages. They're left with very, very vanishingly small amounts, several hundred dollars a month on average, even less in some cases. And the result is that households are just barely getting by. And it's not hard to understand what's going on, but it sometimes does get missed in this conversation. First of all, we have astronomically high home prices, and there are many things going on to cause that, but fundamentally it's the result of a supply and demand mismatch. So for the houses that we need and the houses that are there, there's a gap. And for decades, we have just not built enough anywhere in major cities across the country to support a growing population, especially one that's growing through immigration. So you have new households coming into the mix as opposed to people growing up and having kids and that kind of thing, where there's maybe a little bit more flexibility to absorb population growth in the housing market. But if you combine that factor, the supply and demand mismatch, with high interest rates, the ones we're seeing right now, you have a terrible result for anyone who has an outstanding debt. And Canada's central bank sets these rates. As one economist recently explained it to me, the high rates we've seen are an attempt to produce a softer landing in terms of economic recession. We're experiencing inflation right now, so is most of the world. And neoclassical economics suggests that this is a pretty effective tool to dampen that. But as my economist friend also explained to me, it's a pretty blunt tool. And there is concern that it could be going too far, because the true cause for what we're seeing globally is ultimately supply chain related, labor shortages, issues getting goods to market. And that's really a longstanding result of the pandemic that we lived through. But, you know, it is working a little bit. It's going to keep working. But it does have tremendous unintended consequences and could continue to drive up those debt servicing costs to just an unsustainable level. Many borrowers are effectively on the cliff's edge here. And high interest rates can set them on a course to be pushed off that cliff, which is to default. And that's already happening a little bit. We don't want to see much more of that. But on the supply side, those limitations affect rental prices as well. So do, in turn, interest rates, as landlords pass on their own borrowing costs to renters. And many of the units in Vancouver and surrounding areas are on the secondary market. Even though we have a very low vacancy rate here in Vancouver, there is still turnover. And it's when new leases are being signed that the rents can actually spike right up. Rental increases are basically constrained for ongoing leases, and that's a provincial policy going back many years. But landlords are at liberty to raise the rent as high as they think the market will pay whenever a new tenant comes in. So given the sheer demand out there, which empowers landlords to set high rents, and how those mortgages are being squeezed, it's inevitable that these costs are going to be passed on for renters. So many of the units being on the secondary market, that is to say a family or individual owns the unit and puts it up for rent, means that we see prices just go up and up and up and up. But similar factors are also affecting commercial landlords. And recent data from Live.Rent, a listing platform and data aggregator, actually said that in Vancouver, the average rental, the average renter is paying over 60% on average of their income for rent. That assumes a single income household, but wow. So that's just an astounding figure. Combine that with those who are paying mortgages, who are paying massive debt servicing costs, and we really have an economic disaster in the making.
Mm-hmm, certainly, Margaretta. Now, meanwhile, in Squamish this week, the District of Squamish's council held a hearing this week to review a proposal by Woodfibre LNG to build floating worker accommodations. How did that go?
Yeah, well, they've delayed a decision on it until next week, and it's particularly confusing. For context, Woodfibre LNG is a liquefied natural gas export terminal that's getting built in Squamish. It's a project that has received approval at three levels of government, actually the first project in Canadian history to undergo assessment by an Indigenous nation and to then be issued an environmental certificate by that nation, which the Squamish Nation did. And just, you know, for context as well, world demand for LNG natural gas products continues to grow. Canada is pretty well positioned to supply it, and in the process, we can derive pretty sizable benefits for Canada and Canadians. As for this float L, as we can call it, it's floating worker accommodations on water. It's something that the company actually decided to invest in response to the local community's request. It'll provide homes to 652 workers during project construction. And for a community where, you know, there's about 20,000 people there, that's a fairly large chunk of the total population, especially in terms of housing demand. The city council decided to send the temporary use permit to a public hearing, and that took place this week. And an official decision won't happen until next week. But if approved, the floating hotel will be placed on the margins of town. It's going to reduce strain on the already extremely limited local housing supply. And that's been a big issue in Squamish for a while. Not too long ago, they had a really big kerfuffle because vehicle camping within the municipality was banned. Actually, a significant chunk of local residents, a couple dozen at bare minimum, that we saw reports of, had been living out of their cars just because they couldn't afford housing. And opponents of this hotel, meanwhile, are effectively placing the symbolism of opposition to fossil fuel development, something that the world actually runs on, ahead of local priorities for affordability. That's deeply unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Now, everyone at all levels of government right now is talking about solutions to the housing crisis. What do you actually see working?
Anything that increases supply relative to demand will help. And some of the tools that the provincial NDP government is using here in BC are designed exactly for this. For example, pushing municipalities to build more, allow more housing to get built where it's needed, or removing units from the short-term rental market by banning Airbnbs, hoping that those units get reintroduced into regular housing supply. At our current rate, it's going to take a long time for the impacts of those policies to actually be felt. Houses don't get built overnight. And my worry, and the worry of many in this space, is that it's not going to be enough. Driving down those prices might not even be on the table here as much as, you know, hopefully holding prices steady while we wait for incomes to catch up. And incidentally, highly productive projects like Woodfibre LNG are an excellent way to stimulate this economic growth. These are jobs that typically have 5 to 6 times the GDP impact of your average BC job. But ultimately, keeping prices steady, that isn't the kind of result that immediately garners massive political cover, especially in response to pressure from those who want to see prices stay high or to profit from unmet demand for hotels in BC. So I think the BC NDP is being pretty brave here. And basically what I would say is that once you've started in this direction, it's important to stay the course. The best result politically is the one where your policies can have the most direct effect on the issue at hand as quickly as possible. And there are factors like the aforementioned interest rates that realistically will limit how many developers can actually build more housing in response to more permissive zoning and assessment processes. But while it continues to be profitable to do that, there's a strong chance of success. And I really hope that we're on track for an alignment between needs of private sector actors, the efforts of the public sector, and also the needs of British Columbians as a whole.
As it relates to Squamish, what are you hoping to see?
Well, opponents need to understand that that project is going ahead. Woodfibre LNG is getting built. The question that local decision makers should be asking is whether the symbolic gesture of refusing one aspect of a project, albeit, I think, a pretty essential one that's designed to literally mitigate impacts on the local population, whether that's worth the cost to affordability that this will have. We've also seen comments from local Indigenous leadership. Chief Dale Harry, hereditary chief of the Squamish Nation, said that he was in firm support of the flotel, and he was critical of the district council for delaying the flotel approval. They've done a lot of stuff. They've created a gender safety advisory committee. Chief Harry's mother actually serves on it. I've met members of that committee. They're doing really good work to mitigate the impacts of this project in a really holistic, really, really considered way. So refusing to get this built, I think we'll just worsen the challenges that Squamish and many municipalities, many places in British Columbia and across the country are facing right now with rampant housing unaffordability and lack of supply. So getting a temporary youth permit in place for the Floatel seems like a necessary step. Squamish should do its best to protect local housing and ensure that ultimately a project in the national and provincial interest can get built quickly here.
Margareta, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. You take care.
Thanks, Karen. Take care.